Hello and welcome again to T2RL Talks. And once again, T2RL is demonstrating its global presence as from my hotel room in Zurich, I'm happy to introduce Yuna Huelu, who is VP Distribution for T2RL and based in Auckland, New Zealand, and Stephanie Garner, who is Vice President Airline Loyalty at Travel Technology Research, who joins us from Dallas, Texas.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. Thanks, Ian.
And the subject this month is loyalty. Loyalty is of necessity a very broad subject. Airlines have been running loyalty systems probably since the early 1980s in a way that we would recognize today. And I think it's safe to say that American Airlines Advantage System was the first of the really recognizable loyalty programs. And I just start with a little warm-up question, really, that I'll put to both of my guests here. Why? Why do airlines have loyalty programs? What's in it for them?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons why airlines have loyalty programs. Probably first and foremost, it's to incentivize customers to travel with them over one of their competitors. But of course, they're also interested in gathering data about their customers, having a profile, being able to recognize and reward their best customers and treat them differently during the travel experience. But also, one of the things that airlines have really done to leverage their loyalty programs, and it's probably more apparent now than ever before following COVID, is that they have partnered with third parties to sell miles in a way that generates an ongoing consistent cash flow for the airlines. So even once the airlines had largely stopped flying at the height of COVID, they were still bringing in millions and millions of dollars each month from sales of their airline miles.
Okay. And that's a very important point, or a set of points, really, that we'll come back to in just a moment. But let's give Yuna the opportunity to answer the first question. Why do you think airlines bother running these big, expensive loyalty programs?
The way the story was told to me with the American Airlines Advantage program back in the day was the thinking was when you finish your trip, you get to go home, hopefully with your bags and some great memories, but you don't have a tangible product that you've bought in the store and come, you know, brought home with you to enjoy. And the thinking was that we need to increase the stickiness to our brand, and we need to give customers something tangible that they can own and use later that makes them come back to our brand later. So it's really, really simple marketing, and it's very clever. And that's been the basis for all loyalty programs ever since. But for airlines particularly, you don't have something to bring home with you after that experience, and the miles or the points is what brings you back. It's very, very straightforward, but very powerful.
That's an interesting angle that I must confess I hadn't ever thought of before. So already we're 3 minutes in and I've learned something. Stephanie, you mentioned there COVID, and you mentioned the fact that the loyalty programs turned out to be very valuable assets during the pandemic. Maybe elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So all of the major airlines in the US have deals with banks where customers can hold a credit card, and when they spend on their daily activities, they earn airline miles, and the bank pays the airline for those miles. And so while travel was not taking place very frequently during the height of the pandemic, customers were still spending on their credit card. And back to Yuna's point about staying top of mind, giving customers something tangible to take home with them, having those credit card miles coming in every month gives that customer something to hold on to, the aspiration, the inspiration of travel that gave customers the hope that at some point the pandemic was going to be over and they were going to be able to travel again. And airlines were able to bring in a lot of cash during a very difficult time. Further, the airlines were actually able to use the value of their frequent flyer programs as collateral against loans. So American, Delta, and United all use their frequent flyer programs as collateral against government loans during COVID. And we saw all of the airlines produce valuations for their programs as part of that process. And the frequent flyer programs themselves were all valued at levels that were higher and sometimes much higher than the airline itself was valued at.
What I heard there is that there were really two sets of benefits. One, the strict, concrete financial benefits of having a valuable asset against which they could raise loans and actually gave them, you know, day-to-day revenue at a time when there wasn't much other revenue coming along. But also it was a question of maintaining the contact with their customers through a period when there wasn't much flying going on. We talked about this last time we spoke, Una, but New Zealand probably had a longer period of not much flying going on than most, apart from domestic. Yeah. Is that the way you saw it down there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was probably the case for other airlines as well. So typically an airline's frequent flyer program is going to be strongest in its home market, and it's going to have the most partnerships in its home market. And the further away you go from the base, the less stickiness it has or the less partnerships are available. So when you're operating suddenly as a domestic airline, having been a long-haul carrier for all your existence, your frequent flyer program becomes incredibly valuable because it stands on its own in a domestic market or in a short-haul market. And it isn't really impacted by the fact that you can't fly long-haul anymore. So those partnerships on the ground that were already existing for many airlines just became even more valuable and were able to grow. And the fundamental value exchange between the ground partners and the airlines was not impacted truly by COVID, because if anything, they intensified. There was more purchasing going on at retailers that miles could be exchanged or points could be exchanged on. The credit card transactions, as Stephanie said, haven't changed. You know, the intensification of the domestic market probably actually benefited a lot of the frequent flyer programs, I would have said.
Sometime in the next few days, T2RL will be publishing its annual report on the state of the market for loyalty technology solutions. We'll be covering changing market shares, and we'll be taking a look at some 14 vendors of technology for loyalty systems, including three brand new ones that we've never covered before. So, Una, would you say that this is an interesting and exciting time to be in the market for loyalty technology?
Absolutely. Looking at loyalty systems has to be one of the most interesting exercises an airline can do, actually, because there's a lot going on there. And it's not all specific to airlines. A lot of the technology vendors in that space actually work with other industries. So there's a lot to be learned just by looking and speaking to these vendors. It's also highly competitive. As the report shows, there are many, many vendors, and it's quite dynamic. Again, you can read that in the report, but there's been quite a lot of change in terms of market share. The trend that we're seeing, for example, is that in-house systems, the number of in-house systems or the shares going down, and there are more airlines that are working with vendors. There's a reason for that, and I think the report kind of alludes to some of the reasons why. In terms of functionality between the vendors, there are differences between frequent flyer programs, and there are differences in functionality between the vendors. But what they differentiate tends to be a little bit under the hood. So it can be in terms of their architecture, their technology. It can be in terms of how good of a partner they are to work with, and what sort of experience in other industries they can bring into an airline. So it's a really, really interesting exercise to do, to look at these vendors and speak to them. And the newcomers, really, really interesting as well. Where in the past we've seen probably loyalty systems being managed in one big sort of monolith of a system, what you'll see in the report as well is that this tends to be a little bit more modular now. And I think we'll start to see airlines looking at adopting more of a best of breed approach to their loyalty technology and actually superimposing different solutions and different vendors that can offer, you know, really deep connectivity into retailers' point of sale devices, for example, or spend on credit cards. And that is really exciting, really, really exciting for the loyalty space.
Yeah, you talked a little, Una, about how a lot of these vendors work with other industries. I would say there's also a number of vendors that work in other parts of airline technology that we're seeing grow in the loyalty space. And it speaks to how the programs have been changing significantly over the past several years, moving from systems where customers were rewarded largely based on the distance they flew, and moving towards things like the price of your ticket being one of the factors that impacts how many frequent flyer miles you're awarded. When you get into technology like that, there is a lot more integration that happens with various systems across the airline. And I think there's also some interesting vendors that have worked with other parts of the airline technology that are now getting into the loyalty space because of how the programs are changing.
Yeah, I fully agree with that.
I think one of the trends that we've certainly picked up on in the report that we're about to publish is that airlines are looking beyond just their frequent flyer members, and they're looking to integrate data about their whole customer base in the same kind of environment as their loyalty programs. About 30 years ago, I went to a conference that was organized by one of the big technology companies at that time, who's no longer very evident in our industry. But they said that one of the things they were trying to achieve was to not just get the frequent flyers, but get the loyal infrequent flyers, the people who go once a year on vacation, but they wanted to capture their information as well. I'm not sure the technology 30 years ago was quite up to that, but maybe it is now.
Oh, you've just opened Pandora's box there, Ian. So that's a huge topic. We could do a podcast on that topic alone. So customer data and loyalty data is probably one of the key strategic issues that airlines need to be thinking about at the moment, because traditionally the loyalty data was the customer data and they are actually fundamentally different. And when you've got one order on the horizon, you need to be thinking very carefully about the structure of the data that is going to be required in a world of orders, because your orders come and go, but what is consistently persistent is the customer record. And the customer record cannot be the same as the loyalty member record. That's, again, a subset of that data. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done for many airlines in terms of unraveling, you know, which data kind of sits where, and structuring that in a way and with the right systems that is going to support this move to offer order and one order in the near future. And so some of these vendors, I think, are probably ahead in that game in that they actually offer both the customer data management system and the loyalty systems, which enable you to not only house your loyalty member data, but actually run and configure your loyalty system. A customer database is quite different, though, and it has very different purposes. And separating that data out, cleansing it, putting it, keeping it safe, deciding, you know, where the master data sits and which systems it feeds into, and keeping it secure is a huge meaty problem for many airlines to be working on over the next few years.
Just to kind of, I guess, repeat myself a little bit, we couldn't have done this kind of data manipulation even 10 years ago. It's advances in the fundamental technologies that we now have available that makes these things possible.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, interoperability here is key. And so I think that raises another really interesting issue. A lot of these loyalty systems are now cloud-based, right? And so you need to start looking at what's hosted where. And so you may end up in situations where you've got a loyalty system that's software as a service that's hosted, say, in AWS, but your master customer data is housed in a different system that is in Azure. Being able to work with vendors that understand the complexity of cloud hosting and the interoperability of that is going to be really key, because it's not just one or two systems that need to talk to each other. It's multiple systems that are going to be hosted in different places that need to work well together. And I think the technology can handle it now, but airlines and vendors need to be upskilling on that particular problem of how do you get these systems to work well together.
And Stephanie, we talked about this a little bit earlier on today. The sort of things that Una's describing now probably give us a clue why so few airlines now are running their own systems in-house, and the trend is definitely away from homegrown systems.
Certainly. I think that if you look back to the time when many of the large airlines started their programs, it really was a database that was built upon and built upon to fulfill the loyalty technology. But the available technology and the needs of the airlines to leverage that technology has gotten so complex that it simply doesn't make sense to build those functions in-house. For example, if an airline is going to award miles based on ticket price, there's no reason to reinvent the wheel. The airline probably already has a revenue accounting system that is breaking down ticket prices, pulling out taxes, et cetera. There's no reason for the loyalty department to reinvent the wheel and go build that themselves. They can leverage technology that already exists.
Another thing that COVID will have really, you know, proven is how important it is to have a system that you can just configure, because there were a lot of changes to those loyalty programs that had to be made on the fly. You had to extend the life of the miles of points. You had to be able to change all these rules that had been set in stone for years and years with minimal changes. All of a sudden, you had to be able to configure those changes very, very rapidly to respond to the situation with COVID. And for those airlines that had or have loyalty systems in-house, where some of these rules were hard-coded since the 1980s, that would have been an absolute nightmare, absolute nightmare. So to move to more modern technology where you're configuring your program is absolutely key to be able to compete and survive here.
Yes, and I think we'll continue to see even those large airlines that have homegrown solutions, more and more of them moving to third-party solutions for things like security, data management, just getting from, you know, a data center somewhere, getting to the cloud, I think is going to be one of the forcing mechanisms that starts to move airlines towards that migration. It's certainly not an easy task to move a homegrown system that you've had for 20 or 30 years that's been built on and built on and built on. To migrate that to a new platform is a daunting task, but it's simply becoming necessary.
Yeah, I mean, the world has changed just completely since those early systems were developed in probably the 1980s. So another way in which the systems have changed a lot in the last few years is a move away from simple mileage accumulation, earn and burn, to processes that try hard to recognize the revenue value of the customer and sometimes of a corporation to the airline. I was at a conference of a database provider a few years back, and they were talking about one of their airline customers who used to run golf events every year for their top frequent flyer mileage holders. And they wined and dined these people at a very expensive country club. Then eventually someone did some analysis and realized that all of their top frequent flyers were actually couriers who weren't paying for their own tickets and who were flying in the cheapest possible seats and who were probably not bringing a great deal of revenue to the airline. Obviously, that changed very quickly. But in recent times, we've been seeing much more revenue-based programs around the world. And I think my impression is that that's a trend that's probably got some way to run yet. What do you think, Stephanie?
Absolutely. I think that we're going to continue to see airlines move in this direction. We had a world in the past where customers could, as you said, fly on very inexpensive tickets, pretty long distances, and accrue some very valuable rewards. And meanwhile, there were customers that perhaps were spending a lot of money with the airline, but were flying shorter distances and were not being recognized as valuable customers. And the airlines, I think over time, realized that they couldn't continue to give outsized rewards to customers who weren't actually contributing to the bottom line of the airline. So the first moves we saw were around requiring spend thresholds for customers who were looking to make elite status. So airlines weren't giving valuable upgrades and benefits to customers who weren't spending on the airline. And then we saw airlines begin to move towards mileage being awarded based on ticket price. And I think the third move that we're going to see in the trend towards revenue, and we've already seen some airlines go this direction, but I think more and more we'll see airlines that have a dynamic component to their redemption more expensive, higher demand tickets, you're going to redeem more miles for, and the less expensive tickets, you should be able to redeem fewer miles for.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's definitely a trend going towards that. And it's the interesting part, though, is that it's really tricky for airlines to make these changes because their customers are very attached to the program as they understand it and have used it for the past years. So airlines need to think really carefully before making these moves because as much as they might benefit some customers, they will also be controversial. One of the areas that has changed dramatically that actually enables these decisions to be made well now is data, like the data that is available today that allows airlines to segment and understand who are the different types of customers or members within their program and what's valuable to them, what are their behaviors, what's their type of spend, how can we make the program work better for those customers based on how much revenue we get from them. That's going to be really interesting to see, whereas in the past it was probably one size fits all or, you know, a traditional hierarchy of tiers and you work through the tiers. I think we'll see a lot more diversity in the benefits and the ways in which airlines work with specific segments or sub-segments of customers to get the most value out of the program for them, but also for the customer.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And I think that the importance of having your customer data in a system that can easily take in vast amounts of information that perhaps has machine learning or AI, where the system itself can actually crunch through a lot of that data, look for trends, look for patterns, and especially look for changes. The airlines used to know exactly who their most valuable customers are. Those corporate road warriors who were last minute ticket purchasers on the plane day in, day out, every week. But COVID turned all of that on their heads. The separation between corporate travelers and leisure travelers has become much less segmented, if you will. A lot of those business travelers don't have to travel as much. And on the flip side, you have seen people who, after a period of not being able to visit friends and family or go experience the world, go on vacation, you're seeing leisure travelers who want to do a lot more of that. So your customer segments and the way airlines used to evaluate their segmentation has just changed completely. And to have a system that can help you sort through all of that is incredibly valuable.
So thinking about the question of variable pricing, if you like, having miles, points, whatever, for redemptions, is it all one-way traffic? Is it just that where there is high demand that you've just bumped up the number of miles you need for a segment? Or has there been some gain the other way? Are the airlines putting it into the revenue management mix and actually offering some attractive bargains to their frequent travelers?
Yeah, I think that there is a real misperception around dynamic mileage awards. What we saw when airlines simply had an inventory chart and a U.S. domestic ticket was 25,000 miles, what we saw was that customers had flights they wanted to take, they wanted to redeem their miles on, and the seats just simply weren't available. If it was a high demand flight, the seats just weren't available. And so customers would say, I'm willing to pay more. Just tell me how many miles you need in order for me to redeem this flight. And so one of the customer benefits of a more dynamic system is that, yes, on some routes or times of year, you might have to pay more, but it's not that you were going to pay less before. It's that you weren't going to be able to redeem your miles before. And then on the flip side, as you mentioned, Ian, there are a number of places where we hear revenue management say, man, we would absolutely take more redemption on this flight. Airlines have flights where seats are going to spoil, but for various market reasons, they're not going to go run a fire sale on those seats because of competition and matching and whatnot. But there are opportunities for customers to really find some significant value in places where an airline might otherwise have had seats that spoil.
And not all point redemptions are equal, right? So that, again, is where the technology really comes into its own, being able to get very sophisticated on understanding what's the profitability of the redemption on this specific seat versus this specific seat over here. You know, you can start to really derive even more value out of the same transactions that could just happen blindly. By pushing or influencing customers to go onto the flights where you're going to derive more profit from that redemption.
Let's look a little bit at the future. What's coming next? What are the coming trends for loyalty and customer data management that we can see?
I think there's a couple of trends we're going to see. One is around the ability to redeem miles for things other than flights within your travel journey, whether it's your check bag fee. Most airlines already have some mechanism in place to be able to redeem an upgrade using miles. But as airlines do more and more merchandising, whether it's a seat with extra legroom, et cetera, I think you're going to see airlines working to allow customers to redeem miles for those things. And then, as we've already talked about, I think the move to the cloud, the ability to better manage customer data for your entire audience, not just your loyalty program members, is going to be critical. And then thirdly, I think we're going to see airlines continue to develop partnerships in a way that allows them to generate data sets on customer behaviors, not only with the airline, but outside the airline as well, with those partner activities that they can use to better segment and understand and target their customers.
And not only that, but they can monetize those.
Absolutely.
Back out to the partners, and that can become a new source of income that would be very, very profitable.
So do you think the expansion of the number and types of partnerships that airlines have in their programs is going to lead to an environment where the airlines are just gathering vast amounts of data and then they throw it at an AI and see what startling insights the AI is going to produce?
I think that ultimately that's where we're headed. Airlines have a lot of work to do, I think, to get their data into a format where they can apply AI to it. That's one of the advantages that a lot of these third-party systems have that the homegrown systems certainly were not built with that in mind.
Absolutely. So AI is definitely one of the sexy areas of technology. And my personal feeling is that AI and machine learning and management of very large data sets is the real deal. I think we've seen some other technology fads come at us in the last few years that have eventually fizzled out a little bit. If we are to gain real value from the vast amounts of data that are potentially available, I don't see any other way than to apply AI. Maybe ChatGPT is going to be running everybody's loyalty programs in the next 5 years.
I fully agree that that's definitely the way it's heading, but it comes with other considerations. The thing that's really important to remember here is that the member or the customer owns their data. The airline doesn't, the partners don't. And I think that another trend that we'll see evolve over the next coming years is people realizing the value of that data because it's theirs. And not being so willing to sign away, at the bottom of the terms and conditions, tick the box, exercise as much of their data as they have in the past, especially when it's made obvious to them that their data is being used to be run through AI and
things like GDPR and similar data protection legislation, regulation is going to have an influence on the way airlines and every other organization is able to use personal data. And that old thing about, pages and pages and pages of fine print and then a little box at the bottom that says, and tick here if you agree, that is not going to cut it going forward, I think.
It's nice to be able to put the onus of compliance with these law changes on a vendor rather than having to rebuild your internal system as well, I think.
Yeah, and that kind of brings us back in a circle to the loyalty report that we're about to publish, where, as I say, we go into the offerings of about 14 different vendors of loyalty technology. Plus, we have a look at the few remaining airlines that are still doing it all in-house and the many hundreds of smaller airlines that don't yet have a loyalty or customer data system. I think there's probably an opportunity there for a really smart vendor to offer a lightweight technology solution to get those airlines started on managing and using their customer data more effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's probably also a business opportunity for someone to come in and provide a federated sort of loyalty system for those smaller airlines. So it's a technology and business opportunity together for a smaller airline being able to outsource it in the initial stages of creating a loyalty system. Program would be very advantageous. I think that there are some small attempts. So we're starting to see some of the smaller airlines look at partnerships, you know, where there's similarities and they can get customers to derive value from being part of one small program that covers multiple small regional airlines, for example. That can be a really interesting proposition and the technology then that goes with that as well.
And I guess potentially not just a bunch of smaller airlines, but also some associated businesses, maybe on a regional basis.
Yeah.
Just thinking about federated systems, to me, they seem to come and go a little bit. We've seen federated systems in the past, and Stephanie's got an opinion on this one that maybe federated systems aren't the best ideas, and airlines really want to keep this kind of data and information pretty close to their chest.
I think that there is probably a segment of airlines where a federated system may make sense. Startups, very small. As airlines get larger, they're competing not only with other airlines, but other loyalty programs, other credit card loyalty programs, other general schemes that are in their various geographic markets. And as you saw with the U.S. airlines putting their frequent flyer programs up as collateral, those programs become so inherently valuable that to surrender that value to a third party seems dilutive in a way that most airlines probably are not interested in being. And it really opens them up to their frequent flyer program just being another loyalty program out there in the market, like your credit card reward points or whatnot. Whereas when it's in-house, they have a lot of control. They have the ability to offer those sweet spots of outsized customer value that they would not be willing to do with a third party.
And I guess there's quite a lot of people in the executive suite at Air Canada, for example, who would agree with you 100%.
Seems that way.
It does. It does.
It really does. Someone did some very good deals there at Air Canada over the last 10 or 15 years. Okay, well, I think we've had quite an interesting conversation. We've wandered around the subject a little bit, but I think we're agreed on a few things. We're agreed on the importance of loyalty. We're agreed on the importance of merging the way you manage your loyalty data with your more broad general customer data. And we're agreed that the market isn't really standing still. There are new things happening all the time on both technology and also on the commercial propositions associated with loyalty programs. It's an area that, as T2RL, we're going to continue to track closely. And I hope that maybe this time next year we'll come back and have this conversation again, and there'll be a whole load of new stuff for us to talk about. So for right now, I'd just like to thank Una, and I'd like to thank Stephanie for joining me in this conversation. And I'd like to thank everybody who's listening for listening. And look out for the next edition of T2RL Talks sometime around the middle of March. Thank you very much. Thanks, Una. Thanks, Steph.
Thanks, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.